Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to my good bad brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. I'm still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person even really is, but I figured out a long time ago that being alive is beautiful.
Hi, everybody. This is Jarrett Sleeper. I'm the host of My Good Bad Brain. Really quick, let's just say up top, if you like My Good Bad Brain, check out patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. The support there really helps keep this bad boy going. And also, if you dig the pod, please consider leaving a review. A nice one. I mean, if you like it. You know, if you don't, then maybe don't. I don't know. All right. Today's episode of My Good Bad Brain. This is late. This is supposed to come out last week. We recorded it about 2 weeks ago, week and a half ago, something like that. But you know how these things go when having a good bad brain, a good ADHD bad brain. I'm going to do another episode that's just going to be me talking, doing a brain breather. I'm also going to release this week, so I'm not going to go too into, like, you know, that kind of stuff. This episode, it's weird to, like, I kind of forget what happens between me and people. Like, I forget what we talk about. I forget names. I always say, like, I forget names. I never really forget how someone makes me feel. And sometimes that creates a weird situation where you're trying to figure out how you know someone, and you just have to trust, like, the sense you have about them. And sometimes it might be because you saw them in, like, a chip commercial or something. And sometimes it'll be because you guys had a nice interaction one time at a party or something. I don't know. And so I don't even remember, like, exactly what Melissa and I talked about on this episode. I know where we jumped off from. I can always remember where we jumped off from. But I can remember, like, the feelings that I had associated with this interview, which was that it was very focused and very just interesting to me, because I think a thing that happens a lot on this podcast is there's... And I don't know if it's just me or I'm changing or whatever, but there's this effort to find your sameness with people. Find, you know, on the one hand, that's nice to look for what's, like, we have in common. And, you know, that there's, like, obviously a positive instinct behind that. But it leads to a lot of, like, yeah, me too, me too, me too. And I think also I get that too. I totally get that. Yes, yes, that kind of a feeling, which is validating and which is, like, lovely to go through. I also think I have a bad habit, which I'm trying to pay attention to and adjust, of, like, I think I'm relating. I'm like, if someone tells me something and it resonates with me, and then I'm like, oh, I have a situation like that too. That my sense is, like, adding to in my internal lived sense. But I think sometimes it can be, like, seem, I don't know. It's like, no, keep the focus on the other person. Ask questions. Listen. You're talking about them. This isn't like... So when somebody says something that is similar to something in your life, it's not an opportunity to, like, talk about how you've... Oh, yeah, I've done that too. Like a... Maybe a more well-intentioned version of, like, a know-it-all or something. And with Melissa, I've known Melissa because I've like worked around her and near her, because she produces other podcasts and is like a co-host on other podcasts too. But I never got to like talk to her much, and she always had this energy that I say some of this again. I always repeat myself in these intros, but she had this energy that like she clearly doesn't miss anything. She's clearly taking everything in, but she's like very quiet. And it got me thinking a lot about this idea of like the quiet ones, you know, especially like when you work, you're a quote unquote quiet one working near, near big personalities, like, you know, YouTuber, vlog people, you know, kind of things. And that I was interested in basically jumping off around that, I think I intended it to be more about like our experiences existentially around people who have these big existences, quote unquote, whatever. And then what it is to be near that and witness that and be part of it, but not really. And what it is to be around big personalities where it's your job to be like the quiet one and to make things happen, and how this perception can grow around you as like the quiet one. But are you like, are you? And that just by being quiet, I don't know, there's something in that about like just by being observant and quiet, not putting yourself out there, you can get that label and be like, oh, that you're the quiet one. That person's like, you know. And that it's kind of one of those weird things. It's one of the few, I think, traits you can receive, like a character you can have assigned to you, not based on something you do, but based on something you don't do. That just in a kind of absence, like, oh, they must have be like this. And so I kind of wanted to just talk to her about that. I wanted to like get to know her better. And because I was reaching out to her for someone that she produces for to like see if they wanted to be interested in coming on the podcast. And then I was just like, you know, what about you? Do you have any interest in doing this? Because I've obviously been steering these interviews to be less like influencery, you know, and they're just more people that interest me or that are quote unquote normal or, you know, in my life that I interact with. And I want to bring them into this weird diary forum, formless forum to chat about getting to know them. And, so Melissa did it and it was really just so lovely. I just think it was like kind of intense and so unique to talk to somebody who's different from me, like so different. Like, I just remember having less of the, like, she was so honest and open about things and also was just like the way she processes emotions or her like truth around all that. I don't know. It just felt like very disparate from my experience, and getting to talk to somebody like that who kind of holds this strength, this strong character, and holds their space so strongly, partly despite of, partly because of other people. I don't know. It was just interesting. So Melissa's amazing. She's like a very creative, like writer and director and producer. And anyway, Melissa Montz, I hope you guys enjoy this conversation we had. Yeah, let's get into it. Oh, I'm starting another podcast also. It's very different from this. And I just wanted it. It's called Fight Stuff. It's me and my friend Zeke. It's just a very different podcast. So different that I hesitate to even like advertise it here because I'm like, I don't know. But obviously, I'll be me on it. So there'll be kind of like introspective about ideas about violence and stuff. But it's about violence and violence enthusiasts, fight sports that I do, jiu-jitsu obviously a lot, and some like army, military history kind of stuff, and just a variety of things. I'm not going to sell it too hard here because it's so different. And this space is this weird thing, this little project that we do together, but I'm excited for it. I think it's gonna be really fun. It'll be very different than this. It'll be much like goofier, like me hanging out with my buddy and talking about things that fascinate me and him, things that we talk about already. So yeah, fighting and stuff related to it, like the history of it, and I don't know, gets kind of esoteric. One of my first episodes is like about CTE in the ancient world. So obviously there's, you know, traumatic encephalopathy, like the result of degeneration in your brain from concussion. So obviously I still kind of maintain some interest in this space, but it is all just more focused. It's like fighting and stuff related to fighting. Anyway, all right. that's enough of that. Thank you for listening. Check out Fight Stuff if that sounds like it would be intriguing to you. And on with this show, this wonderful conversation with the terrific Melissa Motz. All right. Actually, we'll talk for a second.
Hello.
Yeah, this will work. This
okay.
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm well.
Yeah.
This is nice. I'm glad we finally figured this
Me
out.
Me too. Me too.
Like I was just saying, I never know like when to stop the preamble, mm-hmm. like warm up. Let's say hi to each other.
Right.
And then when we...
You want to get the niceties out the way before we dig in.
Yeah. And also the nature of this podcast is so like, so loosey-goosey and mm-hmm. conversational. And I just feel like... It being that name, Good Bad Brain, I just want to create like a little space for brains to hang out.
Yeah.
You're like so much of the preamble when somebody comes over or I get to their house to talk on the mm-hmm. show. It's like a little bit warm up, I guess, to get talking. But then a lot of that's like basically what I end up talking
right.
about or something. So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm always like figuring out. But anyway, this was nice. I'll say, I mean, some of the stuff I end up saying, I guess, in the like, part that I record when you're not here talking mm-hmm. about, oh, who's molested to me or whatever. But I'm glad this happened. I don't know. I was reaching out to you, I think, to talk to Megan.
Yeah,
you're kind
and we're
of,
still working on that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. But like as a, in that producerial position. Mm-hmm. But the nature of entertainment these right. days, I suppose, and the little niche of like new media and things uh-huh. is you've always been sort of, I guess in radio, it has a precedent in radio and in general of like the producer who's
right.
kind of also present and part of the conversation.
Uh-huh.
And I'll say that I never really knew how to navigate that well. Cause like I would come on Grace's show mm-hmm. or I'd come on Megan's or whatever. And it's like, are we talking who, what's I don't know.
Right. Right.
And then like you'd chime in and then I'd be like, wait, yeah, so I don't mean to be ignoring somebody.
No, yeah. It did. I mean, like, when you came on Megan's, I was, like, just gradually
yeah.
moving over. The first time we were on, I think,
yeah,
I was
yeah,
gradually
a while ago.
Moving on to the mic, and then now I'm more in the co-host role, so.
Yes. And so when I was reaching out to you about this, mm-hmm. It was about, like, reaching out to Megan again, because I forgot. I just forget to do reach. I forget, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And we were emailing, and then I was like, why not Melissa? Like that would be such a nice, cause I don't know. We've never connected or talked to like in
yeah.
at a length.
Yeah. And we've never done like one-on-one or anything before.
Yeah. And you just have this energy that's definitely like so, present.
Hmm.
And this is just me projecting maybe, but the way I've always read you is as someone who doesn't miss anything.
Right.
And is like, taking a lot in,
uh-huh.
obviously quiet as I think maybe just as a construct of your role in this in the
right
environment.
Right. I don't ever want to step on what the actual host is doing because people are listening for them.
Right.
But if I can add something that's more to the conversation, then I will.
Yeah, and that also speaks to I guess like even if not recording because you're like producing these things
mm-hmm.
often too. Like the nature of a producer is
right.
not to be the one. And I mean, in my own, as I've continued to like create things because of new media, you're like, it's very different when you're a person who's the actor that day or the host that day
mm-hmm.
and when you're being the producer that
right.
day.
Right. I mean, even this is my first time being on a podcast as a guest,
really?
Even though I've been on hundreds of podcasts
yeah.
at this point.
Well, good. I'm glad that we got to do this. I don't know because, yeah, so that was sort of, and I said this before, but just for it being on mic again,
mm-hmm.
like, that was a jump off point, I thought, about this was about that unique, strange role in media,
right.
maybe, and what that creates. Because, and we've talked about new media a bit in general, but I think it creates a sort of like more extreme or more exacerbated situation that most people encounter in normal life, where
mm-hmm.
it's like if you are the person who the role you've taken on is being quieter in the groups or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously in a professional setting. So it's like you have this, and then that weirdness of, it's not just that they're a host. It's like new media and vlogging and the kind of people that you
right.
tend to work with. That murky line of real life and entertainment
right,
is
right.
already so weird.
Right. I mean, cause most of the time, like their job is to be a personality, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Know?
And it's like your job is to
mm-hmm.
be like the quiet one.
Right. To quietly steer what's going on.
Yeah. So it's like, what is that? And like, how do you find yourself ending up being the quiet one? And does that feel like it reflects your normal life? And does that feel like, counter to your normal life? Mm-hmm. And do you feel, you know what I mean? So that's, right. I thought that would be an interesting place to start.
Yeah, that is really interesting.
Oh, and also I'll say secondary to that, both of us maybe, some discussion of, I think, yeah, secondary to that, being around big, big personalities, mm-hmm. especially ones who are like some level of success and fame. And I had this realization a while ago, having like influencers, quote unquote, on the podcast, that it's so fucking great for visibility and whatever. And I think if people wanna, if people come and talk about their things for mental health and everything like that, but also that those individuals have a fairly unique situation that isn't always, I don't know, relatable or applicable, whatever. So I thought it'd be interesting to go like, you also have been in that position of this weird space that we occupy. I mean, I used to say with new media, the strangeness of like, I never became like a vlogger. I never was like, people go to watch my shit for this kind of thing, that you end up being, I always felt like a ghost. My whole life, I felt like an interloper in like strange spaces. And I felt like maybe you would have some relation to that too. And that would be like a secondary topic.
Okay.
But anyway, but now take it away. Because before we started, I said, I don't know, what do you want to talk about? And you said, I just want to talk.
I just want to talk. I mean, just to go off what you were saying, when I was growing up, I was always very opinionated and spoke my mind. And my parents welcomed that. I've always been like very smart and intellectual. And then when I like got to school, teachers aren't really, at least where I was going to school, aren't really receptive. Well, I grew up in, I was born in Arkansas and I moved around a lot as a kid because my mom worked in corporate America. So I've lived in Pennsylvania and Texas and Tennessee and Mississippi and
very like middle America.
Yeah, definitely middle America.
Arkansas, so, I have a funny association with, just just a weird side note, just because when I was in like second grade or something, I came home like the first day of spring break or the day before spring break, must have been a little older than that, but and my mom's sitting there with another family friend's mom and just goes, we're going to Arkansas. And I was like, what? And and she was like, yeah, it's like, I guess they figured it was the furthest they could like drive in a day from Illinois.
Okay.
And so we went on this weird road trip to Arkansas of all places. And it's a unique place.
What part of Arkansas?
I mean, it was, I know it was like, I think we were in Little Rock for one night at least. We stayed at some friends of theirs house. But I, the most thing, the thing I remember the most is like a catfish restaurant called Cock of the Walk. Thinking that was really funny and having like fried pickles for the first time.
Yeah, I miss those.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's some cool stuff about it. We were some kind of like Appalachian kind of town for some of it. But just like a strange journey.
Yeah, the that is a weird place so to weird. Just end up at.
The weirdest thing, the thing that I think about the most from there was this one day. In the car, the other, my mom fell asleep and the other mom was driving. And I guess the other mom drove the wrong way for like 200 miles while my mom was asleep in the front seat. My mom wakes up and she's like, where are we? When she starts to realize, and we pull her to some gas station. My mom's like so mad. I don't know. She's because whatever. She's my mom. And we pulled over to this gas station that had a bear in a cage, which sounds
like an actual bear?
Like a real bear
in
this cage and in the middle of nowhere, Arkansas. And it was just so surreal. And I remember the other mom, as we were turning around and driving back or whatever, and my mom's kind of a big personality and this other mom was a little bit mousy and I don't know that like the other mom was like, well, if we hadn't driven the wrong way, the kids wouldn't have seen that bear.
That's true. And you wouldn't be telling this story right now.
And I think about it all the time. Wow. You know, it's a good way to, you know, you always get some. Anyway, so yeah. Arkansas, yeah, of I'm all
from,
places.
I'm from Northwest Arkansas, which it's not it's a big college town. That's where the University of Arkansas is. It's a lot more liberal than the rest of the state. And it's not very rural.
Yeah.
So it's different from the rest of Arkansas, I'll say that. And like the headquarters for Walmart's there and Tyson Chicken and J.B. Hunt Trucking Company. It's all so there's a lot of money in that area. So it's not quite like the rest of Arkansas. So I've never seen a bear.
in a cage.
Yeah. But just going to school, it kind of it stopped me from being as expressive as I was because I would get shut down from teachers. Like basically like girls don't need to talk this much. And so that's kind of when I started to become quiet because I would, turn off that part of my brain but I, you know, I'd do my work, get everything done, had straight A's, but I wasn't as opinionated. But then when I go back home, very talkative. So I don't think my family would characterize me as being quiet or anything, yeah. but other people would.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, how old was that when that started to happen? That like be quiet thing?
I'd say as soon as I went to kindergarten, I went to this, I started kindergarten in Mississippi, at this private school. I was a lot, my grandmother taught me to read when I was like 3 years old. Yeah. And so I came into school, like already knowing how to read, already knowing how to do math. And they're like, you're talking too much and the other students don't have a chance to learn. And so, there was talks about me skipping to another grade, but then my parents were like, since we moved around a lot, I wouldn't be like on the same level as different subjects. So it would be harder if we did that. So, that's kind of when it started.
Yeah, that's so weird that that young, that's such an unfortunate thing to tell someone. I do think there's definitely some like systemic sexism about that. There was that whole book that was written, I forget what it was called, but like about basically the idea that like men and women, or boys and girls rather, in school, that you know, if a boy's outspoken, he's a leader,
right?
If a woman's, you know, she's bossy and bitchy, right? And that kind of thing continues throughout your life. And it's just interesting that you say that, because I was just talking about this the other day, that when I was in that age, I was very similar. I loved to read. I could read early, and they just like rewarded it. You know, I would like, by reading more books, I would earn time in the library. I was allowed to go to the library.
Well, I did get to, like, I would go to the library because they were keeping me out of class.
That's so wild.
Because they're like, why are you here when you already know how to read this? So it was like, I would actually go to the library, like with the first graders, and I'd be sitting in the library and doing my own thing, but I wouldn't be in class.
Well, there's gotta be some subtle like difference, because I really do think the things we learn from like kindergarten to fifth grade are the things that kind of form us the most.
Right.
And I even think on a literal level of like what you learn, like, the things that make you sound smart, I think, like facts about animals or about mythology or whatever, like you learn all that, like the interesting stuff in elementary school, like if you're paying attention. And that plus, like, I think you really learn how to be. Mm-hmm. And so it's like weird. I don't know. And maybe unfortunate that like I did always have a sense. I mean, everybody figures out how to turn their own things into a curse, but that like to say whatever I wanted to say and speak my mind and you know, and sometimes I think like society makes almost like a mistake by telling all of us, you can be whatever the fuck you want to be.
Right.
You're because you really think that. And then when you get older and realize they don't really want you to think that, it's like this impediment.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that's interesting that like that this subtle shift. I mean, I talk too much. I'm doing it right now. and you just, then you got like kind of taught to be quiet. Do you, I don't know, because part of me envies that. Like, because the ability to hold your own space and not feel like you have to talk or entertain or, you know what I mean?
Right.
How do you feel about it? I mean,
I agree. I think sometimes a lot of people talk just to hear themselves talk. And that's one of the things when it wasn't when I very first met you, but it was the first time that you were on Grace's podcast and you were talking, and I was like, this is a guy that talks, and it's not to hear himself talk. He's actually like sharing wisdom and things that I actually like. I distinctly remember this. You had this big burly beard at the time.
That's right. Thank
and
you.
And so, I just remember, I was like, I like this guy because he talks, and when he talks, he's educating people and or sharing feelings. And it's not in a way that's like condescending or boasting or, just talking so other people can hear him. He's actually saying something that matters.
Thank you. I mean, that's really nice of you to say. I mean, I'm going to act like I set this up just to get you to say that. thanks. Yeah. I think my friend Terry, who I mentioned on the show often, but and came on the show a few weeks ago, actually was the first like listener or whatever, because Terry's just definitely entered as a pal at this point. But that put this thought in my head that, you know, some people think to talk and some people talk to think, and I'm definitely a talk to think person. So I think there is actually a quality of talking and hear myself talk sometimes, but in a hopefully more practical way.
Okay.
Like I just need to get it out of my head, and mm-hmm. I'm still working it out. And I also, that's interesting to hear you say that. That's very meaningful to me because I don't know, maybe in my life too, people like the idea of wisdom, like what the fuck is wisdom?
Right.
I say I don't know a lot. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's like a tick I have, but I think a tick of our generation. You go, I don't know. You just add that to other things. Because uh-huh. it's kind of like get out of jail free card a little bit. Like whatever I say, I don't really know. Though. Who am I?
Right.
And I wonder about that because on one hand, in other people, I don't really believe people who say they know things.
Right.
You know?
Right. No one really knows.
Because you fucking can't.
Right.
But on the other hand, there's something to like learning how to be strong in yourself and mm-hmm. not feel like you have to say things or, you know, entertain or fill a space. That takes a lot of strength to me, mm-hmm. I guess, to stay quiet. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't really have, I don't know how to put a question mark on the end of that, but
yeah, I'm comfortable in silence because I listen and I absorb everything. And I think that makes me like, I can distinguish things in other people that like are constantly talking can actually see. For example, I met with a friend right before this and she was talking to me about a professional project that she's working on. And there's this one guy that we've worked with before that I know he just uses people to move up and he's not really moving up because like he'll only contact with me when he knows that I have something going on in my life. And it's never just, hey, I'm just checking to see how you're doing. And she didn't see it before. And now she has this big project on the table and he's constantly contacting her for it. And so I was able to see that a lot, like a few years ago. And she's just now seeing this.
That is really interesting. I've been thinking about that kind of thing. The idea of networking, right, is like, sounds so fucking gross.
Right.
Because I think we all picture some Hollywoody, you know, right. some scumbag who does that kind right. of thing. And as I've grown, I've realized like real networking, quote unquote, is kind of pure. It's sort of like organic. It's like you like-minded people that you meet because you work on stuff. And so when you get a chance to work on stuff, you ask them.
Ones that you call.
Yeah. And vice versa, like reaching out to people like you're talking about just to stay in touch, just to see what they're up to, just to see what's going on and not having like some ulterior motive.
Right.
But that does create, I mean, my favorite thing is to hire people for stuff. Like I remember I was watching this masterclass. I was watching some of this Werner Herzog masterclass. You know, I'm talking about those things.
Yeah. I've taken like Judd Apatow's and Shonda Rhimes and
how were they?
They're great.
I think they're pretty great.
I love them and so cheap. And I've signed up for all the cooking ones that I want to do now. So I have the like yearly subscription.
My brother got the yearly subscription and my friends got me one for my birthday. Yeah. And then my other brother just had a yearly subscription. So I've been, but the Herzog one, he talks about how he tries to like how much waste is in budgets and da da da. And he tries to have these tiny crews and how he does things. And I was like, I love so much about him. And that's like one of the few things I like, cause I love being able to just have a big, if I have extra budget, you can just hire people, you know? Yeah. But that there is a difference. Like, so the first thing that realizing years on that networking was kind of like just not quitting and other people and being nice. Mm-hmm. And that like, I don't think I was always nice. I think I was sometimes, not that I wasn't nice, but I was an energy suck that I've been like a problem by just being so, I think, connected to the idea of like oneself as a fucked up artist or something like that, or, you know, but by being nice, not a problem, and just sticking around is like, that's what networking really is.
Right.
And then you just keep working and you ask people to work with you when you have a chance. But I do wonder about that. That's an interesting, I don't know. I think I realized once a little bit ago that I was doing the thing of like contacting people because I needed stuff and I didn't know if it, you know, and I hoping they could do it, and also realizing that sometimes when I would do that, you're like, what are you doing? Like, these are people who, like, you realize that you guys are sort of competing for the same jobs.
True.
And so what do you even like, you think they're gonna, so it's like, not only is it like a bad motive, like kind of an impure motive, but also that it's like not even practical. But anyway, that is a tricky thing that we encounter, like this, like, how do you, when you want to get things from other people.
Right, right. And so for like me, for networking, like I used to, you know, when I first moved here, go to these networking events, which I think they're all a waste of time. Like I've never.
Really?
Yeah. Have you had?
Well, I don't know. I'm asking because one thing I've been thinking about recently, what I've been thinking about is like, I've been doing artsy fartsy stuff for a long time, probably like more than 20 years. And I really am realistic about like when I started doing theater when I was a kid. And I was 16 when I did my first like professional show in the city, and I'm 33 now. So I'm going on almost 2 decades of like doing this thing and kind of encountering like that feeling that some of us get when I was a kid too, when I was 18, and kind of being judgy and being like, I'm not going to be one of these guys in his 30s still trying to be an actor or whatever. And kind of having to face the reality of being the embarrassing thing, being like, I fucking love it. And I have to stop by half committing and being like, yeah, I do it sometimes. I don't really, because you just don't want to be that like person who says they're an actor who doesn't act or whatever. Cause it's like, who doesn't want to be an actor, or that kind of nonsense of just knowing, having the voices in your head about what's embarrassing about what you're trying to do or trying to be, how embarrassing your dreams are. And putting that up against the reality of just this inexplicable fucking illness I have that I love it, that I just love it.
And
I
you love should do what you
exactly.
love.
Exactly. And so part of what I was thinking about related to what you're saying with the networking thing is like my primary exposure to art also was theater. And it's, and so I think the major factor in theater is collaboration.
Right.
And that's my favorite fucking thing. So working with other people, working with artists, I don't even really, I get bogged down to the editing. I rarely watch things that I've done like more than once or so, like once they're put together, because I realize the doing of it is what I like. And so one thing I've been feeling disconnected from by hating acting classes and not being involved, never going and doing improv, kind of doing some of the YouTube stuff, but that kind of all getting more tapered off and less collaborative over the last, like, you know, collabs were like how they started. Feeling disconnected from any kind of community and like feeling like, yeah, I don't know. Just being interested in being in a community of creators.
Yeah, I think a community of creators is different from like a networking event where it's specifically an event where people are like usually paying for an entry, or they're paying for like drink fees.
Sure.
And people are just like showing up in suits and, hey, this is what I do.
Yeah.
A lot of those times, at least when I was first moving here, a lot of those times it was just people that were either like interns or entry level assistants, and everybody was looking for a producer to latch onto instead of collaborating with the people that were around.
Got it. Yeah, that sounds horrible.
Yes,
because that's what I'm, that's why I said really, because I mean, it started to occur to me even like to maybe seek out some kinds of, you know, things like how to Just to imbue my like community with new people and new energetic people, because you know a lot of us get bogged down too. Right. You get tired. You don't. I've definitely reached a point where it's harder to ask people to do things for free or for just for the fun of it. I cherish the people actually who still like, because I don't like to take advantage of people either.
Right.
Like, you know, I cherish people who are like, you just have fun creating together. So once in a while you go do it. Because it's rare. And I always think like if we had the skill set we have now, but the energy and that we had when we were in high school, like putting together videos or even in elementary school, I would do in camcorders and we'd like how much you'd fucking get done if we were all just maniacs and wanted to show up and make something. But that's hard to do because you got to pay bills. You're tired. You've been involved with so many shitty projects. You're just like, no, thank you. I don't know. So I guess that thing of just like, touching on this thing of like, damn, I still fucking love this thing. I'm tired. Money's an issue. It's hard to pursue it anymore. Right. And also the kind of part of you that does feel like you want to be the person who has done it, not the person who still does it.
Right.
Has to do it.
Right.
You know, that that whole joke about like having written is great, writing is the worst thing in the world, and realizing like, well, then you should do something else. Mm-hmm. If I just want to be an actor and not like act and be good at it and try to keep it and getting better at it, put my ego out of the way, then maybe I should find something else to do.
Right.
But facing up that, I don't know. It's just like a weird.
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, when I first moved out here, I was moving out here to be like a writer, producer, director. And then I got kind of just like on the track just to produce and let my creativity, like the writing and the directing side, fall apart. And so last year I just made it a mission for myself, because I can produce podcasts all day and I can like have, I can live off that and I'm fine, but that's not what I want to do. So I've just made it a mission last year. Like I'm going to focus on my writing I got a lot of writing done last year. And then this year, my goal is I'm going to make those things that I wrote.
Do you have any, do you have like a writing like strategy that you use to like get things, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I usually, when I have an idea, I'll just write my notes. I keep like just in the notes app on my phone.
Yeah.
Anytime like I'm doing anything, I'll just, any idea that pops in my head, I just write them all down. And I'll do that for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And then I'll print all those ideas out and then I'll do an outline and see where those things fall into place. And then after that, then I'll just write the draft. Like I've written a whole like hour pilot in 2 days before.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So
very Werner Herzog of you, by the way.
So he, I just
he says that he's like, you must write with urgency.
Yeah.
He's like, I will write a screenplay in 2 days, 5 days. Mm-hmm. But like you have to attack it.
And so I'll like sign up for like these screen reading competitions or programs and stuff. Not because I want to necessarily get into the program, but just because it'll give me an outline.
That's smart. Like a deadline.
A deadline.
Like
a, yeah.
Do you, on top of that, like I do have, I've done the bingey thing and I realized with like, it's very much an aspect of my ADHD that I do that because it means it's urgent. It means it's like a problem that I'm obsessed with and I can, and I've struggled now if I can't catch the binge wave or an idea sits and then I don't get to it. Then it's like, it's almost like, well, it's already late. I'm already not doing it. So you just keep pushing it and not doing it. And one thing, I've also done is like, I've realized like, well, if I'm not going to be able to binge it, what's the point of starting it? I don't have 3 days. Well, you know? And so basically what I've written out a new schedule for myself. I'm going to attempt a new strategy, in general of like, cause the stack of projects that are like longer term, you can't finish them in a day kind of things are like stacking up for me,
right?
Administrative things, whatever.
But it could be like, I'm going to finish this act in these amount of days.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out how to like switch my mind and try to teach myself a little discipline of like 30 minutes a day, do a little bit of something. Or like I've heard other writers and like, you know, who are good at like getting up in the morning and doing a few of their other private project or whatever. And so that's like, do you have anything like that going on right now among all your producing to get your...
Yeah, I'm not like, I can't, I'm not a person that can get up and think. I'm a person that's up all night. Like I don't go, don't go to sleep to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And so that's when I get, depends on if I need to go work on something for that day. So usually I'm recording other podcasts 3 times a week. And so I'll get up at anywhere between 8 and 9 o'clock.
Got it.
But my writing is done at night. That's when I get everything done. So between like 12 and 3, that's when I'm writing.
Okay. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's something I'm trying to face in myself. I always thought of myself as like a night person, but as time's continued on, I'm like, I think the quality of my work is actually much better in the morning. Like my brain opens up, even though it's hard for me to get up. And I still have this child's mentality about sleep. Like I have so much difficulty putting myself to sleep. Mm-hmm. So, and yet the quality of work or focus of my work at night is getting worse. So I guess I'm trying to try some new things for myself, but that used to be like how I'd think of myself. And even recently, I did a couple nights that I was up till like 6 a.m. just finishing things and it felt good. But I don't know.
I take naps though. That's what I do. I take naps. Usually I'll take a nap around like 7. I'll take a couple hour naps and it just refreshes my brain for the day.
And do you like set time aside each day or do you just like if you have projects you just...
I set time aside each day.
Cool. Yeah. I'm trying to like... Discipline's a motherfucker.
It is.
It's hard for
me. It is. It really is. And like by setting those, like I'll say that I'm entering a contest and it'll be like the week before it's due. And I have no intention of reading or winning this contest, but I just need my first draft to be done by that day. So I'll enter it and then submit it. And I know that they're not going to call me back because it's just a first draft that probably has all these typos in it. Yeah. But I set this deadline.
I'm glad we're talking about this right now because this is like right where I'm at, where like things I need to get done. And this will be like a good kickstart into the next part of life. I don't know. Where do you think, that like Because writing is something that happens in solitude also. Mm-hmm. And did that desire to write and direct and create stories, is that at all related, do you think, to like this sort of thing in your life of being like a quieter person?
Maybe. I haven't ever thought of that.
And actually, let me back that up even, because you were saying that in school that you were that, but you didn't feel quiet at home.
No.
And again, I've encountered you as somebody who's quiet, but but it's in the form of this
profession. Yeah.
So do you feel like that kind of person?
No, I don't feel like a quiet person at all.
Do people perceive you that often? Like the fact that
do.
I feel like
one of my good friends, she was talking to me and she was like, "You're quiet." And she was like, "You're a quiet person." And when I'm around her, it's like, we're talking all day long and I don't think that I'm quiet around her. And I was just thought that was weird, but she also knows me in the professional setting too. So
yeah,
I didn't know if it was, she was taking part of the professional and personal with that.
My perception of you, like I said, that you don't miss anything does have like when, this sponge quality is what and as a person who's like writes and does these things, is there any truth to that perception that you feel like while you're in those environments and people consider you to be the quiet person, it kind of gives you like a private seat to humanity?
Yes, very much so. Like doing that, or I base a lot of characters usually off of the people that I know, and I have a very good memory. Like I don't forget a lot of things. And so, even with my writing, I'll go somewhere and put on headphones and they won't be on, and I'll just listen to people's conversations.
That's so good.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes put headphones on without music just cause it helps me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I like the way that like AirPods feel in my ear.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking to anybody, but I'll just sit there with them on.
I have like some over ear like Sennheiser things or something, not expensive ones, like $25 or something on Amazon. But I've noticed that sometimes I'll put them on, I don't know, maybe it's like a Thunder shirt or something.
Yeah.
You know, it does feel like it creates a little pod.
Mm-hmm.
But that is an interesting, like very literal sort of format of like this other metaphorical thing that you're experiencing of like being around. Yeah, again, like the, like big personalities and big things.
Yeah, like I feel like everything that I put myself, any position I put myself in, it's like a character study. So I watch like Real Housewives a lot, and my mom's like, "That didn't seem like a show that you would watch." But I'm like, I'm gathering information from these people that I put into the characters that I write.
So it's interesting to like consider yourself a talkative person. Or maybe that's not the word, but not a quiet, whatever you think of, not introverted maybe.
Right.
But then in practical, time and externalities experience that, but like the energy of extroversion continues in this like internal way. And in this like soaking, but like to be part of creation.
Right.
That's
right.
Like, I don't know. That's really interesting. And I know some friends who feel the ability to be quiet and to be comfortable in that, I do think creates a space for people to fall into.
Yeah.
And sometimes really fucking fall into. I have implored some other people that are friends to like try to experiment with not feeling like they have to keep things going. I feel that sometimes, you know, like if you're like talking to somebody and they're not somebody who volunteers a lot or, you know, but I don't know. It's like kind of, I don't know. It fascinates me because it's so powerful to me and so like sort of foreign.
Yeah. I mean, like in personal relationships though, it can be bothersome to the person that you're with because they don't, I'm not open. I'll say that. I'm not an open person. I don't like to share a lot of information. And I think it's just because I've observed people when they share their feelings about a lot of things, then the person like that's listening to these things knows how to hurt them. And that's something that it's hard for me to experience feelings, if that makes sense. Like I don't like to be hurt or sad. And
if you have feelings that it will result in hurt or sad?
If I share too much, then yeah, I think so. And I don't know where that, I've actually like been trying to work this out in therapy. I don't know where that comes from or why, but I'm not open with people.
Do you feel like that in guarding against the extremity of like negative emotions, does that also, do you end up limiting like positive ones also?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get very excited about things a lot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it
does. I wonder about that because my fear about antidepressants or things like that in the past was always, again, and I think this is attached to my own narratives about being a fucking damaged, fucked up artist or whatever, was that the highs and the lows. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'll take the lows so I can get the highs. I've definitely adjusted those feelings. And also my experiences on medication too have shown me that like, that's not really what happens with them. I think like, anxiety medication sometimes can mute life, but it's interesting that, I do think that can still happen, especially when we guard ourselves. My first martial arts teacher said this thing that always stuck with me where he was like, you have to cultivate an attitude of no big deal. Okay. And that like, you win, no big deal. You lose, no big deal. Mm-hmm. If you make a huge fucking deal out of like winning, then when you lose, it's just as horrible. And that like, if you can cultivate, and it's very Zen to me, like to create this, I guess I'm always wondering about the spectrum between, like a healthy kind of distance, detachment. That's what I'm looking for. Detachment versus dissociation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, how's that for you?
Yeah. I mean, like last week I found out some information about, some people that I've known for a long time. And when I found out about it, I was hurt and angry, for the parties involved, both parties, but for very different reasons. And disgusted too. And, I went last week was like a tough one. I'm kind of, cause we were scheduled to do this last week and I'm kind of happy that we didn't, because I was in a very bad place last week. Mm-hmm. I just internalized everything. And I was like sharing how I felt with, people that I knew, but I didn't want to see anybody. I stayed in bed for like 3 days straight. My body was just like on Thursday, actually, I woke up and my whole body hurt, like to the point where it was difficult for me to even walk to the bathroom. Hmm. So
from
like,
a sense of, just of like betrayal.
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. And I've never like last week was one of the toughest, like I literally sat and watched my grandmother die. And this would have been, this last week was like number two of like the worst weeks of my life. And so, like it physically had a, effect on how I was, and emotionally and mentally. And, so
I wonder that makes me think or wonder about, cause you were saying like, I mean, I picture this kid. I picture this kid that you were. That was like, and then they're like, "You're fucking so smart and knowledgeable, and like trying to put that out there." Right. And the response is like, "Hey, stop!"
Right.
And again, this is just the only. And I don't intend these to be therapy sessions, but I think it's interesting that your an image is emerging from me that like you're, I don't know, playing things close to the vest or. We'll just call it this quietness, like capital quiet, whatever, capital Q quiet, that like really stems from a space of great feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like the capacity to experience, and I think maybe a lot of us have this, but I don't think everyone does, like the capacity to experience something like betrayal or grief so physically suggests that those are truly enormous experiences for you. And I wonder if some of this, cultivated guardedness is like, is knowing that you have this capacity that's potentially debilitating.
Huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Because
that's
I also wonder, like, cause you said your mom moved around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
My family was so fucking chaotic and my parents were so chaotic that I just got used to chaos. Mm-hmm. And there was like, the ups and the downs and me being chaotic, my life being chaotic, was just like, that's what it is.
Right.
Things hurt all the time. Things feel fucking great all the time. And just this like life at a breakneck speed. And I think that ties into some ADD stuff too. But it's interesting that I just kind of, I don't know, I experience a numbness sometimes, mm-hmm. even in the face of great emotion.
Right.
And it's almost like you, the way you're describing it sounds almost like you don't experience a numbness.
Mm-hmm.
You have to create a barrier or like a boundary, of
right.
an armor
I
against
do keep
it.
Like people at arm's length.
Yeah.
I do. And so, yeah. Yeah.
Why? That's, I don't know. I'm fascinated with the idea that like whatever the thing is that hurts would be so great that it would, you'd kind of prefer to.
Yeah. And it might actually, now that you're saying that, it might have to do like, I was moving from anywhere from 8 months to 2 years.
Yeah.
I never stayed in one place at a time. So I don't have childhood friends. Yeah. I don't have, like people I was, yeah, I do okay. have siblings. Yeah. And they're awesome.
Yeah.
But
you have a good relationship with your siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. Cause I do too.
Yeah.
Even though it's like crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's just
interesting. I have two sisters and they're awesome. And we're really close. We talk like text all day long.
That's great. Do they live in,
in Arkansas.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. Cause
we ended up back in Arkansas when I was, in high school.
Yeah.
So
you have like this, you have these bonds that are like very strong,
mm-hmm.
but you don't go like making them willy nilly.
Right.
Yeah. That's
right.
fucking interesting.
Right. And so like, when I make friends with people, sometimes I just get tired of them and I don't want to see them after a year. And it might have to do with, I moved around a lot and I didn't have to deal with, I've never had to deal with like fighting with friends or anything. Cause I never knew them for that
long.
Like
what happens past that year barrier.
Right.
Interesting. Are your romantic relationships like that at all?
Yeah. Any guy. I mean, like when I first moved out here, I had a boyfriend that I had been dating in Arkansas, and like we stayed in a relationship while I was here for 2 years and we barely saw each other and weren't really talking, but it was easy.
Yeah.
And so it was just comfortable. And I mean, like in college, my, guy that I was dating, he came out, well, he never came out. I just found out he was gay.
Yeah.
That's
interesting.
He came out recently, but like I knew
because
I stumbled upon some information. So, and I never told anybody cause I didn't feel like that was my story to tell, but we're still friends now. But it was just like weird relationship. So,
yeah, I don't know. There's just like a lot going on with this that I find like really fascinating because, that's what I was going to say. Society would suggest to us that we're not a whole mm-hmm. or something if we don't, I don't know, look like we have some like laughing social media influencer life surrounded by people on the lawn, whatever. But how do you feel? Because you feel very solid to me mm-hmm. in your presence. You have these close, strong bonds with people. It's not like you don't have intimacy in your life mm-hmm. or like the ability to have that. Do you feel, I guess like my question is like, there's like an aspect of this kind of like Zen ability to detach that mm-hmm. I think is very admirable and very like, strong and mm-hmm. can be like very like healthy, for lack of a better word. And other people would see that and be like, oh, that's like dissociative. And that's not, you should be wanting these other, I don't know.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I took this, thing called the Wild Woman Experience, where, the person that does it, her name is Rachel Pringle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, it's really hard to explain what it is, but she takes you on this physical mental journey where she just like blares music and says these like inspirational words, and you're within a group with like 10, 15 other women, your eyes are closed the whole time and you're just expressing yourself through dance and music and movement. And like, at one point I was just like bawling tears. And then other points I was like smiling, and it's 2 hours of just doing that. And, she said like I told her, I was like, I'm a calm person. I usually just like things happen and I just brush them off. And she said, but you're probably internalizing too, because she's like, people see me as a calm person, but I'm able to like take things and release them and really, just let them be. But like, I deal with the thing right then. You don't deal with things. You just internalize them until they manifest themselves in some type of way.
Did you take then steps with that, or did that put you on a direction?
Yeah. That's actually one of the reasons why I started going to therapy again. So it did.
Well, that's a nice segue into our let's do these six quick cues kind of thing. Okay. Is like, because we're doing good. I'm getting better at paying attention to people's time. So the first questions on the six quick cues are always like those two. I kind of ask them as one question now, the first two, which are, have you been diagnosed with anything? And if not, like whatever, because I'm getting less and less interested in a diagnosis because I didn't for years and it didn't matter. So like, what do you feel you like struggle with? And like, what kind of... are your things, quote unquote, and then would be, so that wild woman experience would be one, and therapy, like what kind of medications maybe you've tried or therapies you've tried, and like what kind of stuff do you do?
I don't, I haven't been diagnosed with anything, but
have you avoided or ever seen a psychiatrist? Or
I've never seen a psychiatrist. Yeah. I wouldn't say I've avoided them, but I just haven't like really had a thought that I had a need to go.
Yeah.
And no one's has told me that I need to go to one.
That's probably a good day. I avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I even had therapists who were like, maybe you would like to try. You
know,
and I still avoided it because of my own reasons. Mm-hmm. But that's why I ask is because I think, if someone's like said, and you're doing therapy, then I think psychiatrist is like down the line of things to try. Mm-hmm. I think going to a psychiatrist too quickly is like inappropriate. Because they are the medicine people.
Right.
And there's a lot of other things to try before medicine, I think. But anyway.
Yeah. And I meditate a lot. I think like colors are a thing for me. So I like surround myself with colors that make me feel good. So like, I mean, you've been to my apartment before and I had like orange curtains and I did that because when I wake up in the morning and I walk out, it just like the room feels like a whole sunset or a sunrise.
Yeah, that's great.
And so it like energizes me. And then my room was like pink. So when the sun came in, it would just like be pink. And then I would go into orange. My kitchen's blue. And then my bathroom's yellow. And so that like mentally, I like having that type of stimulation.
Yeah. Very consciously.
Yeah. Even like now I just switched it out yesterday. I just switched it out to lavender in my living room just for like a calming effect.
Yeah. I love
So everything.
Well, I envy that a little bit because that's, to me that like kind of syncs up with my image of you as this person who holds your own space so strongly, because I, don't have that at all. Like this apartment you're in right now, I've been here for a couple of years and this is the first apartment I've ever lived in that like felt like a home. It felt like we wanted to go to. I did paint that on the wall
That's
one
really
day.
Dope. Thank it's a you. Bear and the other bear and fox.
And like a fit of madness a little bit, processing some stuff. But like I never paint my walls. I rarely like I don't put posters on or whatever. So when I go to someone's and as a result I realized I was doing some of that Marie Kondo purgy kind of stuff, you know? And I realized some of that though stemmed from I realized so many of my things are like acquired from other people, like a piece of furniture or whatever that was like they were getting rid of. And you start to realize like this life that I associate with having this like chaotic kind of experience growing up where no space was mine.
Right.
My mom would like move your room when you come home from school. You'd be like, this is your room now.
Wow.
And you had all these siblings on top of each other and whatever. Mm-hmm. Like Bodhi being here dropped on me while my brother goes out of town. You're like, it would never occur to you to have space. Why would I spend time painting my space or whatever? So I do think that's something to just point out and pause on as like a potential strategy for other people is like taking the time to claim your living area. Mm-hmm. And some people, I guess, do that really instinctively, but it just wouldn't occur to me.
Yeah.
You know, and yet when any small thing I do, like I built some shelves in my room and even though they're a mess, I'm like, I like that I picked
them. You did
them.
it.
Yeah.
I was living for the first 6 years of me living here, I was living in a condo with a lady that she owned it. And then I had my own room. And for some reason, my room was painted red. Mm. And nothing else in the apartment was that color. And that just like, it made me angry because it's red. I don't want to wake up to that. But when I moved out a couple years ago, like I made a conscious choice, like this is what everything is going to be. I made it so like I would always feel something when I was in that room.
Yeah.
And so like that, and that's like physically when I look at things, and I always like it to smell like lavender or eucalyptus.
Yeah, I've been getting an incense a lot over the last year. I almost burned some before you got. Sometimes I do it before we do interviews, like Palo Santo or some random incense. Just because.
Yeah, I've got some Palo Santo. I've got sage that'll burn around.
When with your therapy, is it like just normal talk therapy?
It's just talking.
Yeah,
yeah. Dude, I just felt like that since I do keep a lot of things in, then I just needed somebody to talk to.
Yeah,
and that's another thing is like I don't like to burden people with what I'm going through as well.
That's interesting to me. Do you experience, when other people talk to you, do you experience a burdening feeling?
I do, and I try not to.
Okay.
But I do because I'm just, some of the things that they're doing, I'm like you, a lot of times it's like you either put yourself in the situation, so why are you doing it? Like you can get yourself out if you can do it.
But you hold the things people give on you heavily.
Yeah, yeah, I do, and so like when people are telling me these things, it's just like I don't understand why they're not dealing with it.
I think that's really interesting to hear because that's so different from my experience. That's why I asked, because two things. One, the first thing that it turned into an analogy in my head about was like sometimes we have these habits that are oddly for ourselves, but not for the people. I think that about like my own body dysmorphia or eating issues. I think the way I judge myself, I never think about other people. Like it's not part of really how I see anything except myself, which is, that was my initial thought was like, it's interesting. Like if you didn't feel burdened, but felt like worried about it on other people, but that was me projecting my own thing because I realized I maybe burden other people because I'm pouring out all the time, but I don't experience a sense of burden either when they tell me their things. I'm like, oh, that's their things, and I'm just here to listen or whatever. But I don't feel like once in a while, if somebody's actually being manipulative and you can feel it, and then I'll have a very strong, these days, I didn't always, now I have a very strong like, a fuck off kind of feeling inside. I don't actually say that, but I'm just like, 'cause don't put things on people, you know? Like manipulation is another thing. But I think it's interesting to hear that you experience that. And I it feels like, I wonder if that's tied to like why you don't put it on other people. That's, you know, why you're so quiet and hold your own stuff is because you experience other people's stuff like heavily.
Right.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Right. And people like they talk to me about things, and a lot of times they'll be like, I'm sorry for telling you all this. And I'll be like, no, it's a problem. No problem. You can just talk, and I'll let them talk. And I'm just like listening, but I'm thinking like, there's a way to handle this, and you're not going about the way to handle this. Or if I suggest things, then they disagree with what I suggest.
And that is what bothers you. Does that frustration, do you experience that like, instinctively or organically and just in the world or, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That's tough.
Yeah, totally.
I feel like that becomes existential fast because I think part of my numb feeling is one of like the world is so painful.
It is.
And when I think of like, how never ending it is like that there's, you know what I mean? Like it's bad for me. Sometimes I'll tap in, you know what I mean? I've never appreciated the people who say like that whole like, oh, I don't watch the news, it's not my reality or something like that. Because I was like, what are you talking about? Like this it's real.
Yeah.
What are you fucking gonna pretend like? But now as I've gotten older, I've just sort of understood a little bit more people knowing their limits.
Right.
And I think there's a difference. And you can tell when someone's just doing a head in the sand, I don't give a fuck about other people. And when people are like, I just know my limits.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like if you want to even talk about the news, like I've been like a news junkie. And then like, it just got to a certain point. Like when I woke up, I was listening to the news, and then it just got to a certain point where I was like, this is too much for me to deal with right now. I can't deal with it now, but I can listen or read an article later and like take it in, but not take everything in that's been being talked about all day.
So like, obviously you hold so much of your universe. You're taking all that in. And this woman that you said with the wild woman experience, she recognized that in you.
Yeah.
So I kind of went back up to that thought, and I'd ask about if therapy is, if this is part of what you're doing in therapy, or what other strategy you may have at this point. What do you do to process that out? Because obviously no one could hold all that forever.
Right.
It occurs to me that maybe in the writing, some of it gets exercised.
Yeah.
But like, what do you do? What do you do?
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, even last week I was telling somebody about what was happening with me, and there's somebody that I've known for a long time, and they kind of just like listened and then and put it away. Like they just changed the subject to something different, but it was something that I actually wanted to talk to. But it was because they weren't like being an asshole or anything, but it was because I don't share, and so they just thought I was done. And even like when my grandmother died, I was in the hospital room with her and I watched her take her last breath. And when I went to go tell my family, no one really like came to me and said, how are you doing? Like I literally watched her die because they're like, it's good that you were the one that was in there because you're the strongest. And that's something like I can vividly remember everything that happened that day.
Yeah.
And so it's just a lot. I'm trying to like to work on being more open, so then people will actually, they won't, when I do express emotions, they won't just take it and then throw it away. You know,
does that, when you do, or maybe it hasn't happened that often, when you do get the space to talk and listen and feel someone's listening and there for it afterwards, do you feel that you've like, does that help?
It does. Okay. It really does.
Yeah. That's
good to
know.
And so I'm trying to get better about it. So.
Yeah. I think that's, I will say, I think it's hard to learn to ask for space. You know, I think, because a lot of us have like kind of ties into the embarrassing art thing again, because we all have this fantasy of being picked, of being discovered, of someone being like, oh, and I think related to like to that stuff too, that someone will just like sense and know.
Right.
And when they've gotten to know you a certain way, I think it's really fucking hard to do this weird thing of, it's very weird to like, I mean, I asked my friend for a hug like a few weeks ago, and I'm like a very physical, normal person, whatever, but it was still like, I'm going to be fucking weird right now. I really need a hug. And that's so corny, but
sometimes you just need that.
You need it. And I think you also need to allow yourself to do the corny thing and then accept it afterward. Like, physical, that's like touches love language for me. So I've in the, with relationships even been like, can you please just put your hand on my back right now? That helps me feel. And sometimes just in the asking, we create a barrier for ourselves. Now where we go, well, now it's not real. I had to ask for it. But I think it is incumbent on us sometimes to ask for it and then also accept, accept it, even if it didn't happen magically, you know? But that's like, yeah, that's good to know. I mean, we don't know each other that well, but I can totally see. I mean, I can see being like, oh, Melissa's fine.
Right.
You know, oh, she doesn't, because you're just not used to you being that kind of person. And that does create this funny, like, it's like a prodigal son thing.
Right.
It's like a squeaky wheel thing where you're like, well, they don't need anything.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, good. It's good. At least you're starting to know to ask about it and put it out there. Do you do any, does like physicalizing help you process stuff?
I have like an exercise bike at home, so I'll just get on the bike and just pedal as hard as I can. Sometimes I do, like boxing classes on Sundays, and this past Sunday I was like it's more like cardio with a water filled bag that you punch and doesn't really hurt that much, but they play music like so loud. And so like I was screaming while I was like punching, no one else could hear me, which was great.
Yeah.
And my throat was like raspy when I left just because I could get it all out. So
does that work for you?
It does.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Cause I was just want, I asked mm-hmm. cause I doesn't, I've gone through phases mm-hmm. and sometimes it's like you got all this burning it up works, but sometimes in the past it's made it like worse for me, or I'm like, it's not really going anywhere. I got to learn how to like live with my, this thing. So I don't know. That's good. So that's good. So you have some practices in place. Yeah. You have some like physicalizing. Yeah. Is the therapy helping?
It does. Like I said, it's just somebody for me to talk to.
Yeah. That's
like
my experience too.
And I don't feel like I'm burdening someone because they're getting paid to listen to me.
Yeah. I had the opposite for a while where I was like, this isn't even real. I'm paying you, right. You know, and I had to get over that to then like, it's probably my second or third therapist that I was like, appreciated the why we do this, mm-hmm. like why you pay them, why there's this space. Cause I think just like you said, that it's just for talking. I even think just the commitment of the time each week mm-hmm. and saying like, this time is for working on myself. Sometimes just a declaration of the intention of it
right.
has like an effect. Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry, I'll move along. Okay. So three is, why do I always forget three? Three is what's something cheesy that you find inspiring?
Huh. I don't know. That's a lot. I've never thought about
that. That's a weird one, but.
Yeah, I like it though. I have an Alexa at home and mm-hmm. I'll ask it a joke sometimes.
Really?
And it'll just tell like some random bad joke and it'll just make me laugh and inspire things. So yeah
I do think that is because there's something that reminds me of like when I'm on airplanes sometimes mm-hmm. and you're looking at the movies. I watched like one of the last movies I watched on an airplane was that Ethan Hawke movie that was like where he's the priest and it's like
I know what you're talking about.
And I thought was very good and just devastating. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking like, I tend to watch movies that make me cry on planes a lot. And they're usually mm-hmm. something I didn't go out of my way to see. Cause I was like, oh no, I can watch it. I'm on a plane. Mm-hmm. And there was something about that was, makes me think of this Alexa telling a joke thing where you're like in this world of like insane corporate business, whatever, there's the stewardess or a flight attendant is like trying to sell me a credit card and, you right. know, and they're interrupting with ads and still somehow this art makes its way through onto this screen.
Uh-huh.
Like somehow there's still something real in the back of somebody's headrest that's like making me, that's mm-hmm. telling me, and it's like that. It's like in the machinations of like Amazon and this weird robot, right. whatever, there's like this human thing.
It is. Yeah. I mean like the Alexa, like, a lot of people are like, it's always listening to what you're doing. I'm like, somebody's listening anyway. I don't care. Like it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Big Brother does not bother me at
Interesting.
All.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so, I have a tiny apartment. I have four of them just so that when I'm walking in and out of a room, I can really? Always talk to it. Like if I just need something funny or stupid or just to play music or something.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always like hearing people who like don't have the standard obvious reaction to the thing, you know? Cause it does freak me out, but I'm very conspiracy. Not that it matters. Your phone is that.
Right.
Like your phone's listening
to
you all the time.
That's what I say. I'm like, everything that our computers are listening to us, the phones are listening. There's a reason why you were just talking about being sick and now all your ads are NyQuil.
Oh yeah. All the stuff about conspiracy theorists used to be like, they're going to put microchips in us. They're like, no, because you pay $1,000 to have one.
Uh-huh.
It's funny. All right. The fourth one. And, I might limit this question eventually cause we end up speaking about this during the whole podcast. But like, the question is, what's something dark about you is always the fourth question.
Okay.
But like, we kind of like talk about
it
throughout.
I did talk about it.
But whatever you think. Yeah. Because the intention behind it was always that we're also like forward facing, presenting these like sunny mm-hmm. and, you know, nice things to talk about mm-hmm. when a lot of us have like really fucked up, you know, animal things in us.
Right.
And, you know,
I don't know if this is dark, but like death doesn't scare me.
I think that counts.
Okay.
It's pretty goth.
Yeah. Like death. I'm just like and not just in me or other people. And like, we're all going to die. So like it doesn't sometimes like my grandmother, I was really close to her and mm-hmm. I care. But then like when other people die, I'm just like, but like we're all going to die anyway.
Is it the inevitability of it?
Yeah. It's like, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. So yeah. It's life and death. We live right. The things in between, but we're all going to eventually die.
Do you worry about what's next?
No.
Yeah.
I don't.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Also, like with that too, like when people are mourning people that die, like I don't think I've ever really mourned for anybody.
Really?
Uh-huh. A lot of times because it's like, I feel like they were suffering on earth and now their body has been released and they don't have to deal with that pain anymore.
That's been kind of the energy. My grandfather just died a few weeks ago and that's sort of been everybody's energy around that. Yeah. And it's weird because it was challenging for me because you're like, you feel like there's a way you're supposed to feel when someone dies, this grief you're supposed to feel, this kind of thing. And, I mean, the way I've come to describe it is I didn't know that there was a kind of dying that was like packing yourself up over a long period of time. He had dementia and stuff.
Yeah.
And that when he finally passed away, it was a surprise. Like it wasn't in the hospital. Mm-hmm. It was at home, but it was also like not because we're like, we knew it was going to happen, you know? And there's a little bit of relief. Like my dad and my grandma really were, you know, lived with him all the time, taking care of him all the time. And there's a little bit of like, yeah, because he was in pain and he was like, you know, sometimes the dementia led to like sort of like funny things.
Right.
That were like
my other grandmother had dementia and that didn't grieve about that at all because she hadn't been there. Like I don't think she remembered who I was since like I was 12 and she died like 6 years ago. 5 or 6 years ago. And so when she died, actually her funeral wasn't really that sad. It was more like everybody came together and celebrated. But so I understand that.
Yeah, that's cool. That is, I think that's interesting. Maybe part of the point of the dark question too is like pretty consistently when we talk about these things that we have that are dark, you're just like, that's not, maybe it isn't so, maybe we shouldn't think it's so dark. Mm-hmm. There's something very healthy. I was talking to somebody about this yesterday who I think is going to come on to talk about a certain kind of trauma processing, but that like animals experience horrible trauma all the time and don't hold it. They don't hold, domesticated dogs will, but that wild animals don't. There's this like ability to process things and just
seeing
accept
people die or other animals die and get killed all the time
in real life
and life.
Struggles all the fucking time and we have like simulated stressors that still trigger us, our life or death, and something about it, like it's not even real and we still like get so fucked up by it. And that's like, so it's interesting. That seems like very sort of healthy and natural in a weird way to like look at death that way.
Yeah,
I get panics about death sometimes still, and sometimes I definitely have them about like, I'll have this thing sometimes where I'm in the shower or something, you know, which always seems to be like the most vulnerable headspace where like I get the weirdest like sense memory of someone I loved having died, like a sibling or something. Mm-hmm. And I have this overwhelming like grief and like feeling of fear about their vulnerability and whatever. And that's very strange. And I've never really like examined that too deeply, but
do you like after that happens, do you call that sibling to make sure everything's
often.
Okay?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think it's, my sister feels a little psychic, but I don't know if I have anything like that. I think it's more just this weird, you know, it's the same, it's cosmic vertigo. It's the same feeling of when you look in the stars and you're like, everything's so fucking endless. Mm-hmm. Or you start thinking about like, what is existence or like how endless it all is, but how it will end and how finite and you're going to die and there's probably going to be nothing. And those kind of like unanswerable questions can sometimes create this like panicky madness in me.
Yeah.
And so once in a while, but I also kind of think that those are like an artifact of your organic body trying to process something impossible less than they are a genuine like spiritual fear.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The fifth question is, what's the last gorgeous thing you saw?
When I woke up and looked in the mirror.
Yeah, that's the first time anyone said that. That's really amazing.
Yeah.
People will jokingly say like other people, you know, but that's amazing.
I see. Yeah. If you don't love yourself, who else is going to love you? I know that's, people say that all the time, but I genuinely feel that.
Fuck.
Yeah.
You might be the first like healthy person on this show. I mean, I say that facetiously, obviously, because we all have our things, but that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Fucking awesome. How'd you learn that? Like, I mean, really learn it in your body, learn it. You know what I mean? How is that your reaction?
I think I just had, my parents have always been very nurturing and believed in me no matter what.
Yeah.
And told me that I can do whatever I wanted to. I mean, they sent me when, I was going through school and stuff, like they always spoke positivity into my life. Mm-hmm. And, they really believed like I could do anything that I wanted to do and never let me believe otherwise. And even when, like, I was on this career path, like I wanted to go to dental school. That was my thing. And, when I was in college, like my senior year, I took a dental class and I absolutely hated it. And I had taken, no, it was my junior year. I took that class and I absolutely hated it. And then, my senior year, I had already like finished with school basically because I came in with a lot of AP credits and I took classes in the summer. So, my senior year, all I did was take electives for fun because I didn't want to be done with school. So I took like bowling and golf and piano and gymnastics and just all these random classes, but they offered a screenwriting class at my school for the first time. And I took that and I absolutely fell in love with it. And, I was a little afraid to tell them, just because they had already been expecting me to go to dental school.
Yeah.
But then when I told them, they were behind me 100%. It wasn't, they didn't even like stop and think say like, what have you been working for? Like, you have this degree in biology. It was just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
When I moved here, they supported me for a little bit. So before, until I started making money. So they've always been
You phrased something at the beginning of that, about, you said that they, when they spoke into your life.
Yeah.
And I just like, that really is wild to me. I love language. But most people would say they spoke about me or about my life. And I say that, and it's that little instinctive detail is really fascinating to me. And I feel like there's some big like answer about this like quality that you have in that, because you think things matter and words matter, and that what people are going through matters. You hold it and you feel it. And the idea that you would speak into someone's life and that that would matter as a physical thing that does something, not just about. Is fucking interesting. And I probably going to think about that a long time, but I just wanted to highlight that and say something about that. Cause I don't know, all this stuff, all this like sense of ourself and existential and good, bad brain stuff is so about contextualizing things. How do we contextualize things? How do we think about a thing makes it the thing. And I think accepting and knowing your world as something that you have the power both ways that you to affect and speak into is magical thinking in a, that's powerful thinking. It's respectful thinking.
Yeah. I mean, like even like my dad still talks about when I was in seventh grade and I ran track and I just smoked everybody. Like he still tells the story like it happened yesterday. And he's just like, and then he'll tell everybody like what I'm doing in LA. And yesterday my sister said that my mom was bragging to some other people about how I'm just going after what I want. And it's still, even like if they don't tell me directly, I still hear too, which they do tell me directly, but how they speak about me to other people too.
But it does, like, it almost, like, adds this magic spell, like, this manifesting reality. But I think it's, like, you seem to carry that understanding with yourself. That you, your words and the way you speak things will manifest. It speaks into your life and other people's lives, so you're careful about
100%.
It. Beautiful. All right, last one. This is a pretty easy one. I have this thing called the don't kill yourself list. Which is, I always, it's when I was in a really dark spot in my life. It's a list of things that are usually like accessible and just like, you know, things that you in your subjective sense of reality consider to be objective reasons to stay alive. Mine always started with coffee, sandwiches, and lavender soap. So it's something you would add to the don't kill yourself list.
Okay, explain again what it is.
It's just a list of like when you might not need it ever, but for me, I started it because I was like feeling really fucking bad. Mm-hmm. And it was this exercise of like good things about being alive.
Okay.
Like good things like I can always get a sandwich. Sandwiches are fucking awesome. Coffee's awesome. Lavender soap.
Got it.
Yeah.
Lavender. I'm going to go with your lavender too, which love I already it. Talked about yeah, a little
I was like,
bit.
That's a res- when you yeah. said it, I was like, oh.
Yeah. Lavender, massages.
Ooh.
And being able to find answers to a lot of things on the internet.
That's so fucking good. Yeah. I was thinking about that yesterday. It's wild. I was helping do research for the Ologies podcast and just how cool it, like you used to have to use fucking books.
Right.
It's amazing.
Right. And I've been like, I jumped on the, like as soon as AOL started having those discs, I was like, yeah. What? I don't understand exactly what the internet is yet, but I want that.
Yeah.
And at the time my dad worked at Gateway. And so he got me a computer and I, do they even exist anymore?
I don't know. That's so funny because I was like, yeah, fucking Gateway. Right. Yeah.
But he got me a computer and I put the internet on. And then when I realized that I can look for whatever answers I need to things, it just, that kind of helped too when I didn't have like, I couldn't, when I was at school and things and I couldn't really express myself the way that I wanted to, I was in chat rooms all the time.
Yeah.
Lying about how old I was, yeah, but I was
totally.
Yeah, I was in chat rooms just talking to people and made a lot of internet friends.
Totally.
Too.
I mean, that'll be that's a whole nother
episode
that's probably.
Yeah.
Jesus. Well, dope. That's it. What do we do? Hour 15. Not
all
bad.
Right.
We did it pretty tight.
Yeah.
Thank you. Do you want places people can find you?
Yeah, you can find me across the internet. She is not Melissa.
That's right.
Yeah, because it's Melissa with two S's, but I spell my name with one S.
You have one S and one L.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then I have podcast. You can hear me on Don't Blame Me with Megan Rinks, which I co-host. And then other ones, Not Too Deep with Grace Helbig and Directionally Challenged with Candace King and Kayla Yule. And maybe a couple more coming out this year.
Cool.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks. This is awesome.
Thank you.
This
is
like the most we got to talk.
I know.
I feel like I know you better.
I know. Yeah. It's like usually I'm just hearing you talk and you don't hear and there's no talking on the other side.
And thank you for being so open like with all the questions and stuff. I mean, it was a good one for me because I'm trying to get better at receiving. And part of this podcast has been the delightful opportunity that people who are willing to open up and share because, I don't know. That's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, just as the last little thing, is my favorite thing about this podcast is that it has become a non-expert approach to this thing of being alive. And there is this quiet community of people that, it's not like a fucking huge podcast or whatever, but of real human beings on the other ends of this thing that, I don't know. It helps me just to know other people are out there.
Right.
That there are other ways to be alive.
Uh-huh.
And like you interact with the universe very differently than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's like 3-4 things already that I'm like, I can take and try to use to cultivate certain kinds of, peace or answers or whatever with things that I struggle with, you know?
Yeah. I totally get that. And I was, I feel like honored that you would even say that and even just like being around you and the way that you express yourself, even like you have just like both like this masculine and kind of feminine sides to you that I really enjoy. And even like on your Instagram where you're just like dancing around, I'm just like, that's just like, he's just so like just owning his own physical space. And I admire a lot of things about you.
That's what I'm chasing. That's like, I don't have that lived sense all the time. Mm. And I think, there's aspects of fake it till you make it. There's aspects of trying to just cultivate it.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah.
And I hope that this is the start of some new
me too.
thing.
Me too. All right.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Good Bad Brain. If you dig the podcast, check us out at patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. Leave us reviews if you like the show. And that's it. My Good Bad Brain is produced by Mind Jam Media. We're a multimedia production company. We do a lot of things. All right. Thanks, guys. Self-care. Hydrate. Be well.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.